Welcome. The unruffled beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees signals 8 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 in FM in Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts, Dr. Hank Rubicek, our producer, and the show's founder, Greg Audell, who appears here with Floyd the Wonder Dog, Dr. Warren Holloman, our master of wellness, and myself. Not to mention our extended family of storytellers, including Harwood Taylor and Chris Gorman, who hosted last week. Our team goes beyond hosts and storytellers. Yes, we do need a production engineer and media director, and that is Tatiana Gago, whom you will hear from later on in the show. We are also welcoming Chuck Vaughn, our newest intern, to the show. Together with our guest storytellers that we bring on the show every week, we celebrate the magic and the power of storytelling. It so happens that tonight is the first of 9 nights celebrating Navratri, a Hindu festival honoring feminine power. Okay, what's not to love about a festival honoring feminine power? There are many descriptions of this festival, and the holiday is celebrated in many different ways across the provinces of India. Here to tell us the story of Navratri, along with stories in which she has used her own personal strength, her own feminine power, to navigate life, is Dr. Sneha Desai. Sneha often tells stories at the Moth and is one of my favorite storytellers. She was born in Singapore, but shortly after moved to India with her mother and grandparents, where she grew up in the Gujarat province. At the age of 23, she immigrated to the U.S. Sneha, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Mary. I've been so excited to come tell stories ever since you invited me 2 months ago. And believe it or not, when I was younger, I always used to enact being on the radio, interviewing people, sometimes being the guest speaker. So it feels so surreal to be here living that dream, my fantasy.
That is wonderful. And it's so wonderful because it's a little bit of a hint of more of Sneha's dreams that you will hear as we move along in the show. But first, can you describe for us where on a map of India would we find Gujarat?
Yes, India is shaped like a diamond, and Gujarat is on the very west corner of that diamond, and it is about 250 miles north of Mumbai, which obviously a lot of people all over the world recognize, and it also shares a border with Pakistan.
Fascinating. So as I mentioned earlier, the festival of Navratri opens today. Can you tell us a story that will introduce us to this holiday?
Yes, so Navratri literally translates into 9 nights. It is one of the most popular and widely celebrated Hindu festivals in many parts of the country in India. The place where I grew up, Gujarat, it actually is celebrated in a very different way from the rest of the country. In that state, people just erupt at night. It's a long 9-night dance festival. Everyone is dressed up in the most colorful outfits, traditional outfits. They come together. They dance in circles. The dance is called Garba, where they clap and systematically dance in a circle. The tempo is slow at the beginning, and then towards the end, it becomes faster, and everyone who's dancing almost seem to be in a trance. It's just beautiful with the energy that comes alive at that time. And then the second half of the night is usually played with dandiya, and the dance is called Ras. And the dandiyas are nothing but wooden or metal sticks. And this dance is usually performed in pairs where you are clashing the sticks with your partner's sticks. And again, it's all synchronized. It's many steps all together. And it is just beautiful. But if we were to talk about traditions, Navratri actually comes from a few legends. When I was growing up, I was told two stories about Navratri. One is about this goddess Durga, and I'll introduce who Durga is in a bit. And the second was about Lord Ram and his wife Sita. So in Hinduism, there are three supreme gods. Brahma, who has created the universe, Vishnu, who balances between evil and good, and Shiva, who destroys the world when it becomes extremely chaotic. They have wives. Brahma is married to Saraswati, who is the goddess of knowledge and wisdom. Lakshmi is married to Vishnu, and she's the goddess of wealth. And Parvati is married to Shiva, and Durga is a form of Parvati. So the nine nights actually are celebrating these three goddesses and their feminine power. And the story that goes is there was this demon called Mahishasura. And this demon was granted a boon by the fire god that he could never be destroyed by a masculine power. And this demon was evil. So he started creating a lot of havoc, and there was a lot of terror, and the gods were very perplexed, and they wanted to destroy this demon. So all three, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, they came together, and Shiva said, "We need to come up with a very strong feminine power." And Durga was created from their hearts. Durga was given weapons, a lion for transportation, jewelry, and Durga fought the demon for 9 nights and days. And on the 10th day, she beheaded the demon and was victorious. And the 10th day is usually called Dashera, thus means 10, and that's where the name comes from, or Vijaya Dashmi, which is the victory on the 10th day. The second legend is that Ram, which is also a form of Vishnu, was banished into the forest by his father and stepmom with his wife Sita and younger brother. And when Ram and his brother were out hunting, Sita was kidnapped by a demon called Ravan. And Ram took a long time to get to Ravan, but when he got there to get his wife back, he had to fight for 9 nights and 9 days. And finally, on the 9th day, he also beheaded Ravan, and that is also a form of the triumph of good over evil.
I love the triumph of good over evil, but I'm going to stick with the feminine power one.
Yeah, I agree.
So this holiday must mean very much to you. You mentioned that it is celebrated in many different ways across India. Did you dance during the holiday yourself?
Oh, yes. All 9 nights. In fact, when I was growing up, there wasn't any curfew for the dancers. So we would dance until 5 in the morning, go home, wake up, take a couple hours nap, wake up and go to school or work at 7 in the morning. Very soon, the workplaces and schools realized that a lot of people were missing work during those 9 days. So they started giving us time off. These days, because of the noise and all of that, there is a curfew. So dancing ends at midnight back in India.
And this would be traditional Indian dances.
Yes.
Ah. Is there some place in Houston where we might see this sometime over the next 9 nights?
So while today is the first day, in the United States, people usually celebrate Navratri over the weekends. And so there will be several weekends where this will be happening. But one of the biggest events happening is on October 26th at the NRG Arena in Houston.
Wonderful. Thanks for telling us that. So we are going to come back to dancing and your joy in celebrating Navratri as a dancer later in the show. So to all of you listening, tuck this away as a little bit of foreshadowing for what is yet to come. In the meantime, let's start with a story from your life, which is fascinating and in the spirit of Navratri, celebrates your personal strength. So tell us about your life as a young girl in Gujarat.
So I was born to a father who abandoned my mother even before I was born, and a mother who decided that her life was over after that happened. As a result, I was growing up to be an only and a lonely child. By the time I turned 6, I badly wanted a sibling because, one, I wanted someone to share my misery, and two, everyone around me seemed to be having siblings. So I went up to my mom and I said, "Mom, please, can I get a little baby sister?" And my mom looked at me and said, "God only makes married people pregnant." And so I was disappointed. There's nothing I can do about that. It is what it is. I decided I would deal with that fact. Until one day, I overheard my grandmother and my mom gossiping about this Bollywood actress. Bollywood is the Hollywood of India. This Bollywood actress who got pregnant without being married. And so I went up to them and I said, "What's going on? How did she get pregnant?" And my mom looked at me and said, "God made a mistake." And so I didn't know that that was possible. And that was like music to my ears. So that night, I prayed. And I prayed long and hard. And I prayed the same prayer every single night for the next few months. And the prayer was, "Oh God, please make me pregnant." You see, I felt like my mom didn't want to get pregnant, and if I wanted this child, and if God could make anyone pregnant by mistake, then why not me?
Remind us how old you were.
I was probably 8 at that time, between 6 and 8. So I prayed and prayed for many months, but nothing happened. And so one day I stumbled upon this magazine that my mom subscribed to, and it was called Femina. And it had this column where people wrote in their problems about their boss and in-laws and husband and body and whatnot. And it is through this column that I found out that people actually have sex to get pregnant. And there is something called conception. And I felt so betrayed by my mom's lies as I started to realize that this little human being that I really badly wanted is not going to appear anytime soon. And so I started calculating the time to when I would actually get pregnant. And I calculated that by the time I'm 23, I will be married. And by the time I'm 26, I will have a child. But that seemed like such a long time away. So what do you do in the meantime, right? In the meantime, you pretend to be pregnant. And that's what I started doing. In my pastime, I would tuck a towel underneath my clothes, walk around like I'm pregnant, and then plop down on the floor screaming bloody murder because Bollywood had shown me what women in labor look like. So I would scream and then deliver this doll that was my child. And this went on for I don't know how long, but at some point it ended. I know that 23 came and went, 26 came and went, I wasn't pregnant. There was no one to be pregnant with. In the meantime, I got a master's in clinical psychology and I got a doctoral degree in clinical psychology. And now I'm married. I'm way older. And people often ask, right? Well-meaning friends will often ask, "So when are you giving us the good news?" Which is code for when are you getting pregnant because you're married. And they'll tell me, "Oh, you're getting old, your biological clock is ticking, you need to become a mother." And I think, well, when I had no eggs, I wanted to be pregnant so badly. And now I do have eggs, and I think some of them are scrambled. But I don't want children. I am content doing what I do. I'm content as a psychologist. I help so many people in Houston, so many children, some of who are as unhappy as I was as a child. I am helping so many parents learn to be better parents. I'm giving them help, something that my mom probably needed but never sought. And so I think, well, the biological clock may have ticked and I may have kicked it, but you know what? Age is just a number, and I'm content, and that's what matters.
That's a wonderful story. I'm a little bit speechless. So much comes out of it. Growing up in a single-parent family, having changes of culture, multiple cultural inputs, desiring so much. And I have to say, if I have two daughters, if I had ever come home and found them delivering babies out of towels on the sofa, I think I would have had a heart attack. But finally striking out on your own and defining who you are and achieving your own happiness in life on your own terms. As those who write about Navratri today, life is a mystery, and the worship of feminine power celebrates this as a fundamental insight. So we have insight to your feminine power. Now, as the daughter of a single mother and growing up in Gujarat in India, at what point did you decide to immigrate to the United States? This seems to be a sharp change.
Well, so if you recall, I was born in Singapore and I moved to India when I was about 6 and a half. And I never adapted. I never felt like I belonged. My entire childhood, I felt like I needed to be somewhere else. And I would often tell my mom that the first chance that I get, I'm leaving because I don't think I belong here. And when I visited the United States when I was 16, I visited a lot of family. I had a lot of cousins that I talked to. I talked about the educational system. I saw what the lifestyle was like. And I went back and told my mom, this is where I want to live the rest of my life. I was also always a helper from the very beginning, and so it only made sense that I would come to the United States to study psychology, and that's what I did.
So I find this fascinating that you had the strength to choose a destiny for yourself, and you chose a path, and you established your own milestones of achievement. So of the three symbols of feminine power of Navratri that you have discussed, it seems to me that you are the manifestation of Durga, who is the Mother Earth goddess representing strength.
Thank you.
And in some versions of Navratri, Durga overcomes, you must help me with the name of the demon.
Is Mahishasura.
Thank you. And he was a representation of evil, as we have heard before. Now, going a little deeper here, psychology itself can be about dispelling our inner demons. And can you tell us a story about overcoming inner demons as a part of your work as a psychologist?
Sure. I'm going to tell you about my very first patient who I met during my clinical practicum in my master's degree program. He was a 16-year-old teenager who was mandated into treatment by his foster care program. And he would walk into the office every Monday evening looking like a badass, right? He would be dressed in loose pants, loose clothes. He had a baseball hat on, and he positioned it in a way such that I could not see his face. And everything about him screamed, I do not want to be here. I, on the other hand, was this really small, petite 23-year-old who barely looked 15 or 16 at that time. And just recently migrated from India and was being a therapist for the very first time, and I was completely clueless about what I was doing. So that combination with him being resistant and me being clueless was an extremely bad combination. So I'm going to call this guy Sam for confidentiality reasons. And Sam would come in every Monday and sit across the table from me, and it was only a little desk that separated the two of us. And he would come in, stare at the floor for the whole 45 minutes. And I could not see his face, so I didn't know if he was making faces at me or whether he was sticking his tongue out at me. I had no idea what was going on. All I knew was that he didn't talk, and I would get really frustrated and nervous because I would have supervision the next morning, and I didn't know what I would tell my supervisor about how the session went. So I tried asking close-ended questions. Yes or no? Do you have a girlfriend? Yes. Do you have a best friend? Yes. Are you having a good date? Nope. Can you tell me why? Nope. So that wasn't going anywhere. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to try open-ended questions, right? Where he can give me more than yes or no answers. So I would ask him, how was your day? And he would say, good. And how was your weekend? It was okay. And how's your evening going? Horrible, right? And so, I felt like he was cussing at me or something the whole time, silently. And I felt so exasperated. I didn't feel like I was a good question asker, if that's even a term. And so I needed to do something very different. So the next day at supervision, my supervisor said, well, why don't you try taking in a game, because people like games. I said, okay, that's a good idea. So the following Monday, I took a deck of Uno cards with me. Guess who played Uno? This Uno, me, played Uno with no Uno, because Sam was not interested in Uno. And so it was a miserable session once again. The next day I went in and I told my supervisor what happened, and he handed me a paperback book on client resistance. And he said, pick any chapter, apply it, see what happens. And I thought it was a bad idea, but you know, in India you're raised to not question authority. So I obeyed him and I decided to pick this chapter called Sit with the Silence. And I thought, this is easy. I'll just go in. I'll sit there. I'll be quiet. We'll come back. I can blame my supervisor for no one having said anything, and I can still get academic credit for this. And for the first time in months, I did not dread going in to see Sam. So I don't know if I can label this session as successful or not, because while I did sit with Silent Sam successfully, by the end of the session, I almost thought I was schizophrenic because I could hear Silent Night, Holy Night playing in the background. And so after 4 months of no progress with Sam and what felt like torture at that time, I decided it was time to give Sam a piece of my mind. And so I prepared this speech that I was going to give him for 45 minutes the next session. I went in and I started talking about how you're wasting your time. I'm getting credit for this. Why aren't you using this golden opportunity given to you? Yada, yada, yada. And when he didn't say a word for the whole 45 minutes, I said, don't you have anything to say? And Sam repositioned his hat, looked at me and said, can I have sex with you? And oh boy, my insides started screaming. I was like, I didn't mean to turn him on. I was so frazzled. And I told him, we cannot have sex because the law says we cannot have sex. And I sent him home. The next day, I told my supervisor what happened. And he asked, he said, so if the law would have not said that, would you have had sex with him? And I said, no, of course not. I would not have had sex with him because this is a professional relationship. And my supervisor was pleased with that answer, but he said, well, it's time to go tell Sam that. I said, okay. I was reluctant to have another session with him, but I said, okay. And I prepared another speech, but this time I prepared one for only 8 minutes because I thought maybe the 45 minutes one is turning on or I don't know what's going on. So I went in and I spoke and I started telling him about why we couldn't have sex. And I was halfway through it when I noticed that he was shifting a lot in his chair. And I thought, is he having a seizure? What's going on? But then I noticed that he was actually jacking off. In other words, jerking off. In other words, wanking off. In other words, masturbation. He was masturbating while I was talking. And I wanted the floor to crack open and swallow me whole at that time because I was at my wit's end at that point. But obviously that didn't happen. Nothing had gone my way. So instead, I said, please, please, can you stop? And he stopped. Clearly, he had self-control. And I was surprised because after that, he opened up, right? Not literally, he opened up emotionally. And he started telling me about how he hated foster care, how he missed his girlfriend who he had left behind, how his parents had abandoned him, how he was having trouble adapting to his new school. And we had a wonderful professional relationship for the rest of my practicum while I was there. And I learned that I could be a good therapist, that I had passed all of Sam's tests, and that this patient of mine that I felt like I wanted to pull my hair out with actually taught me this valuable lesson, right? We all need love and acceptance. That's what he needed. That's what I gave him. I gave him acceptance. I gave him tolerance. We all need that. We all want that. And if the world could just have a little bit more of that, it would be such a beautiful place.
This story leaves me silent and speechless. I just find it stunning. I am in a reverie as a listener becomes after hearing such a deeply moving story and so wonderfully told. So thank you for sharing that with us. And while our listeners are emerging from a state of so many levels of consciousness awakened, like myself, let me remind everyone that we're here on So What's Your Story? Broadcast live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. Or live streaming from kpft.org. Go modern. Get on the internet. Do it. Our guest tonight is Dr. Sneha Desai, a psychologist and storyteller, and we're hearing about stories that celebrate feminine power in the spirit of the Hindu holiday Navratri. To our listeners, welcome back to our regulars. To any newcomers, welcome to the show. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be an important part of the Houston storytelling scene. In fact, we are the only live radio storytelling show in Houston, and we are really, really very proud of that. But there are other storytelling venues in our community. Tatiana, tell us what goes else. What else goes on in our fine city?
We have our, as a social media director, I need to say a few things about our show. Number one, if you don't have a radio, that is not an excuse for missing it, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org. and Facebook Live on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And there are a lot of storytelling venues here in Houston, but to use the words of the big bopper, oh baby, that's the one I like, refers to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. This is a group not only to help you cultivate your storytelling skills, but also for people who have so many stories to tell. Just get to their monthly story swaps held on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. located at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. as a special event for the month of October, join the guild for Skyline Screamers, 7 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, October 20th at Mormion Park on 18th and Heights. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Mary, do you have anything to add?
Well, I do. And besides the fact that love the Big Bopper, I have known the words to Chantilly Lace for 6 decades. Okay, one of my favorite late night websites for a good night story is the HoustonStorytellers.org website, because you can go there for all of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program. You can also find a listing of upcoming events such as Skyline Screamers on the website.
And tell us what you think about our shows or suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And we promise to get back to you. And please be sure to share our page with your friends. And oh yes, we'd love it if you like us when you leave. And don't miss our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month. The next Moth is November 13th with the theme, Beginnings. Last night's theme was Disguises. Did any of you tell stories last night?
Well, we both told stories. And Sneha, yours was told so well and was so important. Could you give us a synopsis and just tell us what you want listeners to take from it?
Yesterday, I shared a story about a music teacher that I had. And he would come home twice a week, 1 hour each time, to teach me how to sing when I was between 8 and 10 years old. And after getting comfortable, one day my mom decided to leave the house and leave me alone with him during the lesson. And this teacher was very sexually inappropriate with me. He kissed me, he overwhelmed me, and when I shared this with my mom, the incident was minimized. We never talked about it ever again. And in fact, now when I question my mom about it, she has forgotten the incident. So my message to the audience yesterday was, please, please be vigilant about what's going on with your children. Give them a voice. Do not make them feel powerless. Advocate for them. We really need to listen to what they're saying.
That is so important. I have to say that when I was in college, a freshman in college, I went home for a Christmas holiday, and I was a member of the family there who was very drunk and tried to kiss me.
Oh, boy.
And I mentioned it to my sister. I couldn't believe it happened. I mentioned it to my sister, and she said, oh, he did the same thing to me. So I mentioned it to my parents, and it was such a bizarre reaction. They couldn't fathom this, and they just said, oh, you must have been mistaken. There's no mistaking about that. But they said, oh, you must have been mistaken. It didn't happen. And I had always respected them as my parents, and there was a little chink there of, why can't you believe me? This was unpleasant. So what you said was very, very important, and an important message to parents to say, as much as you may not want to hear that, validate your child. Listen, listen, they're telling you something.
Well, and I would also like to say, obviously, parents don't really have the experience to deal with this when their child comes up to them with something like this. But that's why there are professionals that exist. Today is World Mental Health Day. And I would like to encourage parents, please take your children to professionals who can help your children. Mental health is very, very important. Do not take it lightly.
I am so glad you said that. I'm a huge proponent of mental health. I'll add one more thing, and then we're going to go back to storytelling. I get so frustrated when insurance companies say, oh, people don't get cured with therapy. Well, diabetics don't get cured with insulin. People with cardiovascular disease don't get cured with cholesterol-lowering drugs or blood pressure-lowering drugs. They take them for the rest of their lives. So why are we holding mental health to this different standard? Okay. I'm going to get off my grandstanding, but everybody hear that. And let's get back to your stories, your personal Navratrian experiences. Okay, this is a made-up word, and I'm gonna actually credit Hank with that. So I want to know that here on. But I also need to make one more announcement. I need to let everybody know that here on So What's Your Story next week, October 17th, Hank will be bringing in Halloween with a Vengeance with his guests, Candy Bomey and Alan Gardner Atkinson. And they will be delivering tales that will keep all of us looking under the bed. And while you're tuning in, give us a call at 713-526-5738. Write the number down now so you have it ready. Because our KPFT fund drive starts tomorrow, October 11th. And if you can't call, then go to kpft.org, select your form of payment, scroll down. Yes, it's down in the S's. It's going to be down on the bottom. Scroll down to So What's Your Story as the show that you choose to support. We are listener sponsored, and we can't do this alone. So give the station a call or go online and keep storytelling alive by supporting this. We are the only program in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And you'll find us only on KPFT FM 90.1 in Houston. So, as I was mentioning, it's the first night of Navratri. My guest tonight is Sneha Desai. Now, Sneha, at the beginning of the show, we told our listeners that there was a little bit of a foreshadowing of a story to come when you were talking about dancing during Navratri while growing up. And having been given that foreshadowing, let's go to that story now.
So back in 2014, about 6 months before my wedding, just like most of the brides that I have personally known, I wanted to get into shape, okay? And I decided to get into a workout routine. It was an intense workout routine that I did by watching DVDs at home. And after an evening of intense aerobics, I woke up the next morning and my toe was stiff and I felt pain, but I did not really think much of it, and I just went about my business. After 2 weeks, when nothing had changed, when I still felt the pain, when I still wasn't able to walk properly and the toe still hurt, I decided to go to a podiatrist. The podiatrist diagnosed me with tendonitis, and he sent me home with some meds and some steroids and told me to go to a physical therapist. And when weeks passed and the pain started to get even more intense, he told me that I probably didn't have tendonitis, that I possibly had gout. And he said, go to an orthopedic surgeon because he may also be able to confirm if this is gout or not. So that's what I did. I went to an orthopedist. They did some x-rays and they told me they saw some crystals and that it is indeed gout. So that put me in a rheumatologist's office because I wanted him to confirm if this is indeed gout. And he looked at my presentation and he said, I think you have a neurological issue. I don't think this is gout. So you need to go to a neurologist. I said, okay, by this time, I think maybe a month had already passed since my symptoms had appeared. So I went to a neurologist / pain management doctor and he did some studies. It was a nerve conduction study, and he told me that I had tarsal tunnel syndrome, and he sent me to another podiatrist for surgery. I went to this podiatrist. By the time I went to this new podiatrist's office, I think 2 months had already passed, and I had already gone through an MRI, a CAT scan, several blood tests, several x-rays, a bone scan, nerve conduction study, you name it, all of the tests. And I was just getting the runaround. When I went to this podiatrist's office, I was in so much pain that I literally pushed him away with as much force as I can when he wanted to examine my foot. And he said to me, he said, "Sneha, I don't think you have tarsal tunnel syndrome because people with tarsal tunnel syndrome do not experience pain of this type. I think you may have complex regional pain syndrome." By this time, I was very frustrated because I'd already heard so many names. And so I went home and I did my research and I looked up what that was, CRPS for short. And I saw that 70% of those with CRPS eventually become disabled. It's a chronic condition with no cure. It's a rare disease. It's a nervous system dysfunction. All kinds of awful things. And I started crying. But then I decided to spring back into action and I started calling all the doctors that I could who I thought could treat CRPS. To my amazement, there were so many doctors who had not even heard about CRPS and didn't know how to treat it. So I started reading a lot of scholarly journal articles about CRPS and started locating where the authors were, what city they lived in. And I found one, Dr. Abdi, who is the director of the pain management clinic at MD Anderson in Houston. I found his email address. I sent him an email, a very angry email, telling him that there was no one who was willing to look at me. All that I wanted was for someone to take a look at me and tell me if I had CRPS or not. I called his front desk and they refused to schedule me. They said, "Do you have cancer?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Sorry, we only see cancer patients here." And so I even mentioned that in my email to Dr. Abdi. Dr. Abdi must have been an angel because he emailed me within 3 hours and told me, "Call my front desk, get in, I want to take a look at you." He had had experience treating CRPS for 25 years before he moved to MD Anderson. So he took one look at me and he said, "You have CRPS. Time is running out. We can put you into remission, but now we are at the 5-month mark and we can achieve remission only if intervention happens within the first 6 months." And I said, "Okay, whatever you tell me to do." And he said, "We have to give you 3 nerve blocks in your spine and we are going to schedule them back to back every single week." And I said, "Okay." I am so terrified of needles and injections, but at that time, that was such a welcome thought because I needed relief from this excruciating pain. And we did that. He scheduled them. Everything went swimmingly well, knock on wood. And after I received these nerve blocks, I started walking again. I had to go to physical therapy for months and months. I relearned how to walk in the swimming pool thanks to aqua therapy. From being in a walker, using a wheelchair, being bedridden, being in a boot for so long, I finally was physically independent. It has been 4 years since, and I do have flare-ups. There are mornings when I wake up and I feel like I'm not going to be able to walk today. My immune system is shot. I get sick very easily. I am tired all the time, but I can walk. That may change at any given time, but today I can still walk, and that is a blessing.
That's a wonderful story, I have to tell you. I know Dr. Abdi.
You do?
Yes, I do. We did speak a little bit in preparation for the show, and you did tell me you'd been to MD Anderson, but I didn't know you had seen Dr. Abdi, and he is absolutely an angel.
He is. He saved my life.
He has a wonderful demeanor. He cares so much about patients, and he's from Ethiopia originally.
Yes.
And we actually traveled to Ethiopia together where he works with them on pain management programs for their cancer patients.
Wow, that's wonderful.
No, he is definitely a saint. So when you mentioned here now that it was Dr. Abdi, it came together Angel met Angel.
Yes, he's amazing.
He is a wonderful person. So you leave me stunned and speechless again. And part of it is because as I look at you, I would never imagine you with a walker. You're just a young woman who walks with ease. And so this is certainly another story of personal triumph in keeping with Navratri. And it must have been very difficult to absorb the impact of this diagnosis.
It was very difficult, but my husband is extremely supportive. And if it were not for him, it would have been a difficult journey.
And is there anybody else in your life who helps out with this?
Yes, absolutely. So let me tell you this. After I was diagnosed and it was difficult for me to walk, my husband suggested that we should get a service dog. Now, the problem with that was that the service dog was a 1-year wait. It cost $30,000. And a service dog would be a dog. And the reason why I specify that is because growing up in India, I was extremely scared of dogs. I was petrified of them. Because we have stray dogs in India and they all have a mind of their own and they can bite you at any time and you're trained to be afraid of them. And my mom also was scared of dogs, so she trained me to be scared of dogs. But then I thought that if a service dog needs to be in my destiny, I need to overcome my fear. And so I thought, let's start looking at puppies because puppies will probably be less threatening, right? So I started contacting breeders. My heart was set on a Cavalier Spaniel.
Beautiful dog.
And I started contacting breeders. But then when I did my research, I realized that there are so many dogs that are in shelters, millions of dogs that are in shelters and rescues that are killed every single day because they did not find a home on time. And I decided that I will rescue a dog or at least go look at rescue dogs, right? And I decided to go over to Canine Angels Rescue where they had all these dogs in a cage. I looked at their profiles and I realized that my heart was set on Bugsy. Bugsy was a little pug mix. And I wanted to just take a look at him, right? Because I'm so scared. And I just wanted to take a look at him. But when we got there, Bugsy was standing outside with a volunteer. And when I called his name out, he ran over to me and started humping my leg. And that was terrifying to me. So I ran into the building and I said, let's see my second choice, that is Coda. Now Coda was sitting in a cage very quietly with a little cone around his neck. And he's this black poodle mix dog with beautiful brown eyes. And I looked at Coda and I said, hi, Coda. And he got up and he started wagging his tail. And my heart melted. And then my husband said, can we take Coda on a walk? And the volunteer said, sure, whose dog is this going to be? And I very excitedly said, mine. And so they handed me this dog. And at that point, I was frozen because I was still scared of dogs. But I didn't want to show them that I was scared. So I just pretended like this is the most wonderful thing in the world. And we took this dog on a walk. When we came back, I held Coda again. And when I entered the building, all the dogs started barking and the big dogs that were out started jumping on me. And you would think that for someone who is so phobic to dogs, this is the ideal time to pass out or something like that. But in fact, the opposite happened. Coda was the one who started trembling. And while I was holding him and he was trembling, all my maternal instincts came alive. All that I wanted to do at that point was to protect this dog. So I actually put myself between the big dogs and him. I looked at my husband and I said, we are taking this dog home. He thought I had lost my mind. because we were not prepared to take a dog home that day. He said, you realize that this is a dog that we cannot return, right? It's not a product from Walmart. And I said, yes, and I am taking him home today. There was some resistance from his end, but I put my foot down because I thought Coda, who at that point had high heartworm, he had injuries from a dog bite. He had been rescued on the very final day at the kill shelter. If canine angels would not have gotten there on time, Coda would not be here today. And I thought, this dog is as defective as I am, and he needs love just like I do, and I'm going to take care of him. Coda came home. He's the sweetest dog ever. He comes to work every day with me. And trust me, after Coda came home, I started walking even more. I, in fact, started running, which I thought would never happen my entire life after the diagnosis of CRPS. And Coda is extremely healthy now, and we are the best of friends.
That's a wonderful story. And for those of you who are on Facebook Live, you can see Coda here. And I love that his name is Coda the Canine Yoda.
Yes, and because he has ears that are like Yoda's, and his facial expression is that of a wise man. And I thought that this name is perfect. It's my husband's idea, and I thought that the name was perfect.
Now, I understand he has an Instagram following.
He does. He's a superstar on Instagram. His handle is Coda the Canine Yoda, K-O-D-A, the Canine Yoda. And he is a very dapper dog. He has more outfits than I do. And he poses by walls. He does a lot of giveaways. And he also raises a lot of money for donations.
Oh, he's wonderful. Now, I think you and I were actually sitting in the lobby here, and you said, oh, look, there is a dog magazine. Coda was just on a photo shoot.
Yes. So Coda posed by a Houston mural, and that picture was selected by the Houston Pet Talk magazine to be featured in this month's Houston Pet Talk magazine edition.
So I don't know who has more star power right now, you or Coda.
Definitely Coda.
And I'm not sure. He may just open up and start talking to us.
He may. I can make him bark if you would like him to.
only if he's not bothered by it. You want to say hello, Coda?
Coda, can you bark? Can you bark?
No.
He doesn't want to be on the radio.
He likes being the photographic star, a model. That's obviously the big thing. That's so exciting. So, everybody, I'm just having a fun time looking at this dog. He is part poodle, but he does have these ears that are, if you're on Facebook Live or get on Facebook Live, check him out, because he definitely has Yoda ears, and Yoda is one of my favorite characters.
Yes, well, I will tell you, when I started his Instagram account last year, I had no idea what to do because I did not even have a personal Instagram account. And being a black dog, black dogs are the least adoptable. There is something called the black dog syndrome, because there are a lot of people who think that black dogs are bad omen. They're superstitious. The pictures don't come out right. The lighting at shelters is not right, so they are not really seen.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people don't adopt black dogs, and black dogs are the ones who are killed faster than the other dogs. And so I didn't know what to do with the Instagram account. I thought, well, he's a black mutt. He's not going to go very far. But I think that he's the most unique looking dog, if I can say so myself. It could be a bias, but...
A little bit maybe, but...
But I think he's the most unique looking dog. And I would... I'm going to advocate for rescues, because there are so many beautiful, lovable dogs out there that are not being adopted. So please, just take a look. There are puppies, there are adults, there are all kinds of dogs at rescues who need love, who need homes. And look at Coda. I mean, there are so many myths about rescues, but I think he's the most well-behaved dog in the world.
He is a wonderful dog. Well, we're coming close to the end of our hour. Tonight is the first night of Navratri, and you have processed being a single child of a single parent, and then determined that your future was in a place about 8,000 miles from where you lived, which to me is quite amazing. You were able to penetrate the emotional armor of a troubled youth. You've dealt with CRPS. And finally, you not only overcame a fear of dogs, you've made your dog into a social phenomenon. So I would say you are living life in the spirit of the three faces of feminine power that are celebrated during Navratri. And these are strength, passion, and knowledge. I think your stories have covered all of them. I would be happy to dance in your honor. And speaking of dancing, what are you going to do to celebrate Navratri for the next 8 days?
Well, I'm definitely going to put on my outfit, which is known as Ghagra Choli. I'm going to put that on and go to this event on October 26th at the NRG Arena. I am so excited to be dancing at that event.
I definitely have to check that out. I have to tell you, Lagan, the Bollywood movie Lagan, is one of my favorite movies. And I went through a period, Choli, Lagan, many of these Indian movies I watched and actually own. And I still watch Lagan. I love Lagan. Not to mention that the lead actor is quite handsome.
Well, in my fantasy, I have married him as well. So
I hate to say it, but so have I.
Well, he's my husband first.
He's such a good man. So I want to say a good night real quick.
Good night. Good night to all my readers, to all my support system, my friends who are here in the studio today to watch me, Coda, my patients, and everyone who's listening tonight. Thank you so much, Mary.
And don't you dare move. We are listening to a little Navratri music as we close out, but we do have a new and exciting show following us. Coming up next, you'll be loving the very cool and the very new Flash Gordon Parks. So make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. So this is Mary Edgerton, and with my guest, Sneha Desai, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Just make a gift to KPFT This Hour at kpft.org. Then contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses too. Just fill out the employee portion of the form completely and send the form to KPFT, Attention Matching Gifts, 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Your help makes a difference. This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.